Hello, dear Get More auditors and listeners. Today we are super happy because we have Mr. Lou Adler with us. So, Lou, tell us, who are you?
Well, it could be. I'm 77 years old, so it could be a long answer. So let me narrow the focus. Who is your audience that would likely listen to this? And then I'll give you a summary based on that specific group, and we can bring it down to 30 or 45 seconds.
Yeah, the Get More podcast is mostly targeting business owners in a couple or entrepreneurs in a couple, but also executive and whoever wants to listen, who is interested in, business stuff, couple stuff, and how to get more. So that
Okay,
opens
so
many doors for you.
well, that could be a long call, but I'll make it short. So I have been a recruiter most of my life,
Okay.
from 32 to about 62 or 72. But I started out as an engineer and a manufacturing guy, a financial guy. Then I got in recruiting because I didn't like my boss. But I
Okay.
realized hiring people was a business process if you did it right. And I've been pushing that rock up the hill forever. And I haven't even found the top of the hill yet. So, that's who I am. But I actually believe that with artificial intelligence, and I know you have a picture of a brain behind you, and machine learning and good solid business process, the hiring decision can be both more impactful and powerful for both the company, the hiring manager, and the candidate alike. So that's who I am, and that's what I talk about.
Interesting. And how do you see artificial intelligence helping in the recruiting process? That's interesting.
Well, as a manufacturing person, you're focused largely on improving productivity, reducing cost, and the one key thing in manufacturing is yield and scrap. So if you have a lot of scrap, you got extra cost. So when you look about Six Sigma processing or quality, the goal is how do I use as little raw material as possible and make the best product as the outcome of the factory. So you put stuff in and it comes out. Well, hiring should be like that. You have the raw material as a candidate whom you're looking at, you're assessing that candidate, and the outcome is a hire. But as a recruiter, I realized that process was broken. Hiring managers don't know what they're looking for. They want to see a lot of candidates. They exclude good candidates for silly reasons. Bias plays the role. So as a recruiter, attempting to improve the process, I realized, hey, you had to define the work. Everybody has to agree to the job, the situation. And if you control the process, you can hire a great person to achieve what I call a win-win hiring outcome. And a win-win hiring outcome means after a year on the job, the candidate says, I'm so glad I took this job. And the hiring manager says, I'm so glad we hire you. But most people, hiring managers, companies, and candidates alike, think about what they get on the start date. They think about the size of the pay package, not the work itself and the circumstances. And unfortunately, it's that short-term decision-making that has infected the whole entire hiring process. And trying to come up with a cure for that is what I call performance-based hiring. And let me say, after 40 plus years, I haven't found a cure. I think I found a cure, but people don't want to take the medicine. So, given that, I've never used that analogy before, but I'm going to use it with you. And I'll probably use it in an article coming up because now that I think about it, I will.
That the problem is in your equation, you have human beings making decisions,
Yeah,
and
right.
that's where it all goes sideways.
Haywire.
Yeah,
Yeah.
the decision process being in the human brain, that's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem, right?
Excellent. And so what, I mean, as you said, you did manufacturing, you did finance, you did stuff like that, but what made you stick with hiring?
Well, I was running a factory of 300 people when I was 32 years old. I was working 70, 80 hours a week. I actually liked the job, but I had gotten married for about married 3 or 4 years by then. And I had a 4-year-old son. And I realized that I had to make a choice. So this is 1978 or so. But I hated the group president. And he came down to my factory every 2 to 3 weeks, and I probably quit every other time he came down. He and I were like, oh, water. we just didn't get along. And I said, leave me alone. I don't want you in a factory. I wouldn't let him
Okay.
in. And then he said, I would quit if he showed up. So, and then his boss tried to change my decision. So I ultimately said, I can't work with this guy. So I gave him 6 months notice, but I was using these recruiters. And my wife and I had dinner with one of these guys. She said, you know, you might want to become a recruiter. And I was hiring a lot of people. So it was not unusual at that time. I got a dog in the background. I don't know if you can hear him, but let's put this on pause for 1 second. Can we put it just so I can get the dog? Okay.
Yes, please go on.
So my wife supported the decision to become a recruiter. I had actually been doing recruiting. I'd hired 4 or 5 people, well, maybe 10 people at the time. And when I was at a big corporation, I was on an MBA recruitment program. So I kind of knew I'd be good at it. But once I got into it, I realized it was not a good business process. So that eventually became trying to improve the process every step of the way. It wasn't instantaneous, but I had one client that said, if you give us a 1-year guarantee, I'll give you all our business.
Okay.
And that was the game changer. Because giving a 1-year guarantee changes how you look at the process. And what was interesting is my purpose of doing it was not altruistic. It was business. I want to do the right thing. The candidate and the company wanted to make it transactional, and I wanted to make it career focused. So it was interesting. There was a clash there, is that I was doing it because it made business sense. Why a candidate wouldn't want to get a better career? Why a hiring manager wouldn't hire a better person? So that was a clash, and trying to bring all those perspectives together is still a challenge. People still want to make short-term decisions, and you see it every day. And you look at employee engagement, according to Gallup worldwide, it's, you know, people who take jobs are only a third are really happy with the jobs they took in the first year, a new hire. So you know it's screwed up, and that's been like that for 25, 30 years, or forever maybe.
Okay. And when you started recruiting, you started doing it yourself, or you joined a company that was doing recruiting? How did you
start? I joined it with 2 other guys who were very, very successful. But my first assignment, because I didn't know any better, it was for a company in a plant, manufacturing plant. Again, that was my background. So I set this up. So when I first went to my first search assignment, which was 1978, so we're talking a long time ago, the president of the company gave me a list. It was a handwritten job description.
Okay.
Had to have 10 years experience in this product line, had to have an engineering degree in this background, had to be this kind of personality. And I looked at him, and this was like 3 days after I started. I said, Mike, that is not a job description. That is a person description. Let's put the person description in the parking lot. What does the person need to do to be successful? And he said, turn around the plant. So I said, fine, let's walk through the plant. Been walking through so many plants, it was easy. We found it was a terrible plant. If anybody could look at that plant and say they had scrap, they had people not working at all, they had the layout of the plant was bad, it smelled bad, it was dirty. You could just see it was a bad plant. So I said, well, we found 7 things that would be the tipping point. And 3 weeks later, I made a placement and hired somebody who could, and he had a bit of the background, but didn't have exactly the background. Over 1,000 different situations, I have never used the job description listing describing a person. I say, put the person description in the parking lot. What does the person need to do to be successful? That opens a talent pool to everybody. I've had the number one lawyer in the United States look at it. And he said, this is a game changer. But people don't want to, they still want to rely on skills, experience, and competencies rather than the work itself. And getting people over that hurdle is that brain you got there. There's like this wall there. I said, no, I don't want to do it that way. I want it, which makes so, you're going to tell the person what they're going to do. And so when I'm talking to a hiring manager, I don't want to do that. I said, well, when are you going to tell the candidate the work that he or she's got to do? I'll tell them when they start. I said, why don't you tell me ahead of time? I'll find people who want to do that work. It's so obvious that you have to define the work, but if you have a disconnect between what you're looking for and the work itself, and a person starts, you have problems. And that's the cause of most problems. We define work using indirect criteria, skills, experience, and competencies, rather than, hey, let's find someone who's competent, motivated to do the work you want done. It's so logical. And yet,
you would say that you are more looking at soft skills than who the person
is. Soft skills are part of it.
Okay.
But it's not the whole thing.
No, it's not the
Some
whole
of it
thing.
is hard skills. The guys, I mean, yeah, for this turning around a plant, clearly they had to have enough skills to understand manufacturing processes, had to have
Right.
enough skills to hire, soft skills to hire people, had to have enough soft skills to communicate people what the problem is, had to have enough project management skills to manage the project. So it's a combination of hard skills and soft skills. But the core question I ask, if you were the candidate, I say, Thomas, we got to turn around this plant in 9 months. Here's the plant, here's the situation. Tell me about something you've done that's related to that. So then I'll spend 20 minutes saying, okay, how did you build the team? How'd you lay out the plant? Where'd you start with it? What did you find most challenging? What did you like? So I'll ask a bunch of questions to validate that your accomplishment is comparable to that. So we
Right.
look at the whole thing. I mean, I want to say the whole thing, that's kind of silly. But we look at all aspects of that job, including hard and soft skills, and also the situational variables. Do you want to
Right.
do this work? Do you like the manager? Do you like the situation? Is it motivating? Is it meet your requirements? So we're looking at every factor that would drive on the job success.
Okay. So, and what, I mean, you told it you haven't found yet the perfect solution, but what made you stay with recruiting? Why did you spend the rest of your
About
life doing that?
no, well,
What drove
I would
you?
say about 20 years ago, I got hooked up 25 years ago in the dot-com boom. So I
Okay.
got out of recruiting official 100% to start a new company that combined technology with hiring training.
Okay.
The dot-com boom fell up, came down, and I said, I don't want to do recruiting full-time. So we then created a training company to train companies in performance-based hiring. So for about 10 to 15 years, I did a combination of those, but the last 5 to 10, it's only on the training. And I actually retired 2 years ago, said, I don't want to do this anymore. But when I saw generative AI come out, I realized that was a game changer.
Okay.
Early on, I said I was pushing this rock uphill, and I had never seen the top of the hill yet as I'm pushing a rock up the hill. But when I saw general GAI come out, I said, wow, that's the top of the hill. And that's why, although I'm 77, most people would say I'm pretty enthusiastic and pretty
Yeah,
excited.
you sound definitely.
Yeah. But if you saw me 2 years ago, I would sound, I'm just tired of it. But now I actually believe that it is a game changer if people use it. But I have some people in HR, so we can't use it. Now, a year ago, you cannot talk about AI. Today, it's
Yeah.
least two-thirds are talking about it. But I have some clients that you can't even mention it, which is like they're in the Stone Ages. Makes no sense to me, but HR sometimes is very conservative, very risk
Yeah.
averse, very old line thinking, and that is a core problem in driving a company success. HR seems to be should be the head of the curve, not behind the curve,
Yeah.
but they seem to be behind the curve.
So if I got it right, you are out of retirement because you're
Yes.
all
Well,
expired. So
I'm not
what
getting
is
paid for it, but I'm out of
Yeah.
retirement. So.
So what's next for you? What do you intend to do with all this AI thing? What's
Well, I
your
think I've
plan?
got
What's your
one.
vision?
Yeah. Well, I've got one project that I'm working on that's I think is very important. Is I think when you combine artificial intelligence, machine learning, and performance-based hiring, it does in fact improve the hiring decision when done properly. But to prove it, there's one class of jobs where it can be shown quicker, more quickly, and more impactful, and that's in hiring account executives selling large-scale business systems.
Okay.
Because, from how do you, and I think a lot of sales managers hire people in sales roles without thinking through the entire job. By combining, and that's a huge, I mean, that has an impact that transcends the person and the company. I mean, if a
Okay.
person, I mean, these AEs, account executives, generally are responsible for $1 million to $5 million in sales. It could even be higher and a little bit lower, but it's at least $1 million to five. That's how they pay their salaries. And if your company gets it wrong, the cost is huge. So you can measure, that's an area where you can measure performance, but there's also a lot of mistakes. So one is, I'm hiring a sales manager or a account executive for a big job. You focus on superficial, not everybody does, but you don't focus on their track record of selling similar systems. Our process allows them to. So the project I'm working on is proving that this all works, that impact of that. We've done it without AI, but it's time consuming. I think with AI, we can almost do it. We got to build a model, but we can do it almost instantly. But that has a huge business impact in driving sales, making companies more competitive, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a project that I'm working on, is using data analytics and machine learning to improve sales hiring success. It works for all jobs, but that one is universally a challenge, and it's got a lot of problems. You can solve that problem pretty quickly.
Right. And when do you see that working or running
Well, we're
already?
doing it now. We're going to be in prototype development. You know, it's now March of 2024. We're going to be a test run on that starting in June, July, and we'll be. It, obviously, we got to hire people and then track the results post hire, but
Yes.
that's a process we're involved in now. So it's going to be a year project, but we're definitely bringing people in and
Okay.
starting the training in the next 2 to 3 months.
And so you are working with a hiring company, or you do it on yourself and you try to find
No,
people?
we're working with other people, but we're trying to get sponsors. We're trying to get companies. I'm talking to one company that's got 500 open positions, like another company that's got 50 open positions. So
Okay.
we're trying to get companies who want to go through it and participate in the project.
Okay. Wow. Sounds great. Sounds
Yeah,
great.
it's fun. It's an exciting
Yeah.
project.
Now you sound very excited. That's definitely, definitely. That's
Yeah.
good. And on a more personal side, as you your wife was a key in having you go into recruiting, and when you got out of it and created your own thing, how was the couple relationship doing inside of that because of the
Let's
workload
say
of
this. Yeah,
everything?
it's
How did you manage that?
it works. I've been married, we've been talking about that, 53 years. You give up, yeah, I don't want to say you give up a lot. She supported me 100%, still does. But you know, if you're in a relationship, and I know some of the work you do is relationship oriented, it's a lot of give and take. I think I'd say it's 50-50. She'd say it's 3-to-1. She gives up more than I do, but I think it's 50-50. But it works. It works. Like, she's out now doing something. I got the dog. So, and I work out of the house now. So, but our house is, organization of the house makes it that I'm kind of a separate from the rest of the house. So that works. So, but I don't say it's not challenging. I am number one. I live in a great community, Laguna Beach, California. And just, I feel blessed to be there. And I met her in a beach community in California. And in fact, just the other day, or yesterday, I'm reading this story about Brian Wilson. And Brian Wilson was the founder of the Beach Boys and the key writer. So the Beach Boys. And he said, what's his most important song he's written in his whole life? And what would you think it is, the Beach Boys' most important song? I'm
But the
sure
problem
you
is
know
that
who
I
the Beach
don't know the name of the songs. I know them when I hear them,
Boys.
but I
Okay,
don't know the name.
well, the Beach Boy, obviously. So when I grew up, so 77, so this is, I came out to California in 1968 from New York. But the song, Brian Wilson, who was the founder of the Beach Boys, his favorite song, he felt the anthem was California Girls.
Okay.
And so everybody can be a California girl. I went to school upstate New York along the Canadian border. I misunderstood that song, understood it. I thought you had to go to California to get a California girl. So my whole goal in life after graduating from college was getting to California. And a year later, I met my wife, and we got married a year or two after that, and we've been married since then. So I feel I've been successful in both life and my personal life in finding a California girl, and that's Brian Wilson. That's my anthem as well, California Girls.
That's so nice. That's super cool.
But I would urge you, now, if you're doing this a podcast, Thomas, what I would do is bring in the California Girls track right about now and show that in there, and you'll see that if you listen carefully, and I know English isn't your first language, but I don't think it's my first language either, because I couldn't understand it. I thought you had to go to California to get the California Girl.
I will have to
But
listen to it.
oh, you gotta listen. It's a classic. It's still a classic.
In regards of putting music on the podcast when you live in France, there are so many regulations. I will end up in jail if I do that.
Yeah, you probably have to pay a premium. So
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
maybe
I
I'll
heard
put it up.
once, just as a side comment, that that was some years ago before digital and so on. And there were guys in France. There is an organization that makes sure that the music creators get paid when their music is played somewhere. And those guys were walking in the streets where there are restaurants and so on with their hand in their pocket, and they were able to write down the music notes of what they were hearing. And then they were checking if it was a piece of music that was existing or not,
Ah,
and
jeez.
if the guys had to pay for it. So it's absolutely crazy. But yeah, that's welcome to France.
I'll go 30 seconds.
But it's a lovely story. It's super cool. So yes, Lou, what would be a takeaway for the people listening to this episode, or what's a deep insight that you would like to share with the audience?
Well, I guess the one I would do, and I think it's an important one, and it came out after I was a recruiter for 4 or 5 years. I had thought I was going to place a candidate as a job as a plant manager in an electronics firm, a state-of-the-art electronics firm. At the time, they were making displays, before phones displays, but it was certainly displays, and certainly that was a hot industry in the mid-80s. And the candidate told me on a Monday he was going to take the job. On Wednesday, and my fee for that, and it was an all or nothing thing because that was the type of recruiter I was. If he took it in today's dollars, my salary, I would have got a fee of about $75,000 in today's dollars, US dollars.
Okay, nice.
And if he didn't take the job, I wouldn't get that at all. So I'd get zero. So it was either 75,000 or nothing. So on Monday, he says he's going to take the job. He calls me on Wednesday and says he's not going to take the job. He's got a better offer somewhere else.
Oops.
It was a bit of a shock. As I went through the details with him and I got my composure because I just lost $5,000, so it was somewhat of a challenge. I said to this candidate, and I think this is important for everyone to hear, is I said, John, you're now making a strategic decision using tactical information. Making a strategic decision using tactical information. So, what do you mean by that? I said, everything you've told me about why you're going to take this job is what you get on the start date. Yes, you're
Okay.
getting a little bit more money, slightly better title, slightly shorter drive. But when you think about after the start date, the job you're doing is you're going to an old line electronics manufacturing company. 3 years from now, you'll be no better than you are today, the day you start. You go to this other company, slightly less, a little longer drive, but you're going to be in a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility. You'll be a different person 3 years from now, and you're giving that up. He called me the next day and says, Lou, thank you for that advice. I decided to take your job. He calls me a year later and said, most important thing I ever did. Don't make strategic decisions using tactical information.
Right.
I've now been made to VP Operations. We're moving most of our manufacturing off to China, and I'm leading that effort. This was when China was big. And it's the important thing is too many people make long-term decisions using short-term data. And
Excellent.
when it comes to careers, they all look at the size of the start date package rather than the size of the job. And companies do it, hiring managers do it, candidates do it alike. My advice to them is don't make long-term decisions, career decisions, using the size of the start date package. Think about the job itself, the career, the company, the team you're going to be working with, and are you going to be better off a year or two from now than you are on the start date? And if you are, that's going to be your determinant. Focus on the size of the job, not the size of the start date package. So that's what I did. That's the idea that I would leave to people.
That's a nice one. Excellent one. Thank you so much. And if people want to talk more with you or learn more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, I would go. Well, I've written a book called Hire With Your Head. So that's one thing. If they
Nice.
go to a company called performance or performancebasedhiring.com, you'll see that we have a monthly book club. You don't have to buy the book. You can come to the book club. We talk about all these issues. They're for hiring managers, recruiters, talent leaders, HR people, and job seekers. And we discuss a lot of different issues about the future of work and how to really put yourself on to hire better people and also to get better jobs. So we talk about that, performancebasedhiring.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So, Lou, I want to thank you for having been on the Get More podcast and for all your information and life experience sharing. Really appreciated it.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you for calling me and inviting me to your podcast.
Thank you. So, guys, enjoy. Get in touch with Lou and we meet on the next episode. Bye-bye.